resting his velvet cap in his hands. "What is it, Clemence?" the Duke inquired. "The weather be a worsening, Your Grace, and Mr. Higham thinks it'd be unwise to tarry long. He learns 'tis some distance to the next inn, where we could change horses or rest for the night." "Very well, Clemence, I will not be more than a few minutes," the Duke replied. The second coachman bowed and went from the parlour. The Duke closed his book reluctantly and picked up the glass of inferior wine that was the best the inn could provide. The meal had not been a good one, the mutton had been tough, and there had been no choice of dishes. But what could be expected in such a wild part of the country, with, at this time of the year, few travellers of any consequence? It had been, as the Duke was well aware, an unusual procedure for someone of his standing to journey to Scotland when there was still snow on the ground, and the weather, to say the very least of it, was uncertain. But he had been extremely anxious to discuss with the Duke of Buccleuch at Dalkeith Palace some manuscripts he had recently discovered at Warminster that linked their families in the reign of Henry VIII. He had therefore braved the elements and been rewarded for his courage by having what had been to all intents a smooth journey to Edinburgh. He had stayed at Edinburgh Castle for some nights and then proceeded to join the Duke of Buccleuch at his palace for a number of long, earnest and erudite discussions which they had both much enjoyed. "Warminster is far too young," the Duchess of Buccleuch had said tartly to her husband, "to spend his time poring over dusty volumes when he might be looking at pretty women."
"His Grace does not find contemporary socialites as alluring as past history," her husband replied with a smile. The Duchess, however, had done her best to interest the Duke of Warminster in their youngest daughter, a pleasant young woman with considerable talents in music and painting. The Duke, although extremely polite, had made it quite clear that his only interest in visiting Dalkeith Palace was to talk with its owner. He had set out on his homeward journey well satisfied with the results of his visit, and convinced that, as it was now the beginning of April, spring was in the air. But during the last few days there had been unprecedented gales, which had made the Duke's carriage rock precariously on the rough roads, made hard and slippery with recent frosts. However, the Duke was too immersed in his books to notice such minor discomforts. He had stayed at Thelston Castle with the Earl of Lauderdale, and for a few nights at Flores Castle, a magnificent building erected in 1718 by Vanbrugh. Now he had no more visits to make, and there were no more convenient hosts to offer him hospitality before crossing the border. As was usual on such occasions, the Duke's servants grumbled and complained at the discomforts of the journey far more than their employer. It was true that the second coach, carrying the Duke's valet, also contained, besides his luggage, certain comforts that were not accorded to lesser personages. His Grace, for instance, always travelled with his own crested linen sheets, soft lambswool blankets, and his special goose-feathered pillows. There were also some bottles of excellent claret and brandy, which, despite the jostling they had received, were considerably more palatable than anything that could be purchased at the local inns. It was unfortunate that when His Grace had stopped at the Grouse and Thistle at midday, the second travelling coach had fallen behind. This was doubtless because Higman, the Duke's first coachman, had insisted on taking all the best posting horses for himself, which meant that only very inferior horse flesh had been left for the second coach. "I tell His Grace afore we starts," the third coachman said bitterly, "that as couldn't rely on obtaining decent animals in an earthen barbaric country like Scotland, but would His Nibs listen? No." It was a statement the other servants had heard 100 times since they had set out from Warminster. The fact that the Duke himself had journeyed to Scotland in his yacht before joining his coaches at Berwick-on-Tweed had done nothing to mollify the coachman's resentment. Inferior animals though the horses might be, they certainly seemed impervious to the roughness of the roads and the sharpness of the winds, which would undoubtedly have disturbed and perhaps incapacitated horses from the south that were not used to such weather. As he finished his wine, the Duke rose from the table he had been sitting at and crossed